gonna get in trouble. I'm not doing that.
Good job.
Welcome to the F5 Recovery Podcast. Today, Ricky Palais III, also known as One Pretty Ricky, is...
I'm not a cactus expert, but I know a brick when I've seen one.
I don't even know. Okay, anyways.
He is
out today, and so I am taking lead as the MC, host, whatever it is that Ricky calls himself when he does the show. And so he'll be back next week, and we'll get back on topic. We were going to have a... it's going to be the Wild West today. Ricky's usually the... I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio, but like he keeps going into these dream worlds. I imagine that's like different levels of ADHD for me. And Ricky is kind of the spinner top to like let you know if you've gone too far or if you're in reality. So hopefully there's people that are listening that understand that. Metaphor, I guess, but anyways, joined by Scott and Kirsten, and as always, Scott, this is your second. This is the second podcast.
Missed last week.
The first podcast that he did was the lowest ratings we've ever had.
That's not true.
It might be.
Scott's got a fan club.
Yeah.
So we're just winging it today, and last night I was at the Ridge Treatment and Reentry Center, which is a sponsor here, and also GoAwayBear.com and F5 Project, Shirts from Fargo, and Heat Transfer Warehouse. Thank you all for being sponsors to this podcast. But last night I was in the relapse prevention, mm-hmm. and the conversation was around tolerance of things that may set you off on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. right? And so I think... maybe to follow up with that, we could do this one about that. Specifically, you know, when it was mentioned that the topic was tolerance, my first thought was like tolerance of like how much I can drink. First thought. And then it was elaborated that, you know, sometimes we have people in our life, or for me personally, I have like this audible like sensory overload that happens sometimes where if I'm in a room full of, like in a small room mm-hmm. with full of people and they're all talking at the same time, I'll just like get up and I just don't have very much tolerance for that, or just negative people or, you know, whatever. So, Scott, what is in your recovery when you are encountered by intolerant people or your mindset's negative or whatever, what's your tolerance level, you know, for that now compared to what it was like when you first got sober?
That's a good question. I think now it's part of... before, when I was drinking, it was always... I was very short. You know, I didn't have very much tolerance for anybody, and it was always, like, snap, yell at people, just react to shit. Mm-hmm. Always just bam. You know, and just almost to the point where, you know, I always talk about... one of the things is I go on the offensive, mm-hmm. you know, like if somebody's disagreeing with me or I don't agree with them, I go on the offensive until they just like, enough, dude, you win.
Yeah.
It's just
stop. Bully them into,
I just can't deal with you anymore. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, but with my recovery, I think it's been one of those things that I really have to work on to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, there may be somebody, and I've heard it more and more, you know, about, you know, I don't know what somebody else is going through. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when they're reacting to me, it's not probably not because of me.
Yeah.
It's probably because something going on in their life. You mm-hmm. know, since they found out a family member has cancer, they're going through a divorce, they've had a death, something. But I just happen to say something that sets them off, you know. And then, but I've found that for myself that I've really got a much higher rate of tolerance for people. And I think that comes with the patience. And part of it is... then I'm more spiritually fit. Mm-hmm. You know, it talks about it in the book about being, you know, for me to continue on my daily journey, I have to be spiritually fit.
Yeah.
And when I'm not, that can be really off balance. And I think that's part of it is I can have, I think we were talking about this Monday night a little bit at the reentry group, you know, about how I was really off on Monday. I just had, for whatever reason, I know now a little more about it, but I couldn't put my finger on it, mm-hmm. but it was kind of cool because Adam kind of pointed it out to me because I couldn't see it myself.
Yeah.
You know, but my alcoholic behaviors were coming back without drinking. And I think that's part of it is I have a less rate of tolerance when I'm in that mindset, when I'm getting back into my alcoholic, you know, behaviors or whatever you want to call them. They're coming back, and then I start reacting to shit instead of stepping back from it and kind of pausing and going, this isn't that big a deal.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know what that level, I don't know, I can feel it, and I think that's another part of it. when I'm in a better place, I can identify it.
Yeah.
You know, I can see it coming, but like there's days like Monday where I didn't see it coming, and I couldn't identify it. And I think that's more of my what I was like when I was drinking.
You just felt edgy or what?
Yeah,
what do you
just
mean?
Everything was, and then, you know, I think part of it is, you know, I usually have a pretty positive attitude and I kind of try to keep people, you know, pumped up at the office and, you know, our team members and just trying to keep that positive energy wherever I go. But, you know, I wear it on my sleeve. So when I'm not doing it, then people are coming to me going, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
So then it's that response. And then as soon as I say that, then I'm starting to think, normally I'll catch that and go, wait a minute. They're concerned about you. Why are you snapping at them?
Yeah.
But on Monday, I couldn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
And every time somebody'd ask me, I'm like, fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Just, why do you keep asking me?
Just keeps getting better.
Yeah. I'm having a great day, okay? You know, but I think that's part of, you know, when we can be around other people in recovery, that when they see that, they can kind of pull it out of us.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, like, if it's my better half saying it, like with Carrie coming at me, I'm going to have a different response than what I had with Adam coming. And he didn't come at me as a boss. He came at me as somebody in recovery saying, hey, something's going on. What's going on, you know? So And I think the best thing for me that day was I ended up going to I wasn't planning on going to to that reentry meeting, and I went there, and we ended up talking about anger.
Yeah.
You know, and how do you deal with anger? I'm like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
So I think it's part of that. It's just that idea of, you know, I need places like that. I need meetings. I need to be able to go somewhere and talk about that stuff. Because if I let it sit, then it just festers and it gets worse. And then I don't, if I'm not dealing with it. So, does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, you got like a bunch of kids and big family. And there's got to be some level of tolerance or intolerance or snappy or negativity that happened from time to time.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's kind of interesting to look back, like when you can look back and be like, oh, that's how that makes sense. You know, like when I'm snappy or whatever, Matt has a period tracker. He's like, oh, hey. And then he checks his phone and I'm like, you dick. Anyway, but that so typically. But I mean, there are.
Does he get a notification?
Yeah, bitch approaching, yeah. Crabby ass week coming, you know
crabby
what I mean?
Crabby ass week coming.
Stay out of her way.
Yeah, you're wrong this week, wrong.
Just admit it.
No, that doesn't happen to me. Anyway, of course, like, in regards to recovery, like, I always felt like when I was drinking and doing unhealthy things, I was less intolerant. I was more, just because I knew, like, you do you, whatever. I feel good no matter what. And then when you get sober, that's when, like, oh my God, everybody's annoying. Like, I always pick the slowest guy to drive behind. I'm always behind some idiot at the DMV. Like, I'm just, and then I, you know, you start to realize if everybody's stupid, maybe it's me. You know what I mean? If everybody, and I make my days miserable. My perception creates all my problems. And the best picture I have of my kids ever is when I put the two youngest in timeout. So they're sitting on the bottom step and one is bawling his eyes out and the other one is laughing. It was just like, it's all perception, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're the same, sitting on the same shitty step. But very different reactions. But that's all of life, you know? And so I read the Four Agreements when I was in my 20s. I just think it's the greatest thing, and I reread it. I try and reread it every year, but just to like not take anything personal. And like you were saying, anything someone does or says has nothing to do with me. Even if they literally say, you suck, you know what I mean? It's still all about what's going on with them. And I just have to choose, do I want to be around them or do I not or whatever? But it has nothing to do with me. And all of my problems come from me dreaming up what you're thinking. And it's probably negative. And then, you know what I mean? Like this whole thing happens. But, and then... just we only have one rule at my house, and it's don't be a dick, and it just covers everything. Like in school, be a good listener, don't be a dick in class, don't be a dick to your, you know what I mean? And it really covers all the bases. And so it's, but it also teaches you to like tolerate some people are having a bad day and some people are just dicks, you know. Mm-hmm. But just to give them their space and treat them with kindness no matter what, because you just never know a year from now where they're going to be. Or they'll, I've had so many times, and maybe I'm just spineless, but I really do in my heart believe in kindness no matter what. Even if you're screaming at me, like I want my values to match my actions, so I'm going to be kind. And that, and I'm spineless, and I hate, avoid confrontation. So it works together. But so many times I've had someone come back and say, I just remembered that you were kind to me, you know, and I was a total dick, or I was in a bad place, or whatever. And that's such a big thing, because nobody remembers what you say ever. They just remember how you made them feel. And, mm-hmm. you know, you just know that that's a friendly direction to go in. Anyway, but I definitely, in my recovery, when I was probably 13 years sober, 14, I don't know, somewhere in there, I quit going to AA. I just, not intentionally, it was, I guess, but... It just kind of became, I got really busy and I had a little kids and a career, and I mean, I was a big deal, you know? So it was the one thing that just kind of slid off the radar. And then I started to lose my mind, and that's when I got intolerant and I became this monster. And it was just like my alcoholism, drinking or not, was very alive, and it still is, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was just like, that was probably one of the best experiences in my recovery, was to just prove to myself, you're still alcoholic, you still need these meetings. And I really wanted to have it be like depression or something like that. And every time I've gone to a therapist or a psychiatrist or something like that, thinking this is gonna fix me and then I won't have to do those dumb meetings, it's just like inappropriate treatment for what I have. It's just like if you gave me my antibiotics for ADD or whatever, you know, it wouldn't work because it's not the right treatment. But for me to go to something like that and rehash me, talk more about me and that wrecks me. Then I'm a nightmare, you know. But when I go to a meeting and ask somebody about them, for whatever bizarre reason, I'm more, like you said, spiritually fit. I'm more connected. I'm more patient and kind. And, but so it's, to this day, a direct reflection of what I'm doing with my recovery. And because your recovery has to come first, comes before your marriage, before your kids. And then I'm a sane person. I'm not screaming at my kids. But yeah, and some people are just annoying.
Yeah. I would agree with that last statement.
So, Adam.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to turn it around on me?
Yeah, as a CEO and having a lot of people underneath
that's
you.
That's interesting. It really is, yeah.
It is.
Holy shit, I used to see you in detail.
I know, I'm like, geez.
That itself.
That's a flip.
Wow.
Twilight Zone.
I'm glad we were tolerant of you.
For a long time.
Yeah.
So, do you see yourself, like, as a CEO and somebody in recovery, that is there a difference for you as far as, you know, how you treat people, how you treat your team members, you know, those kind of things? Is there any kind of, you know, frustration that comes, or that tolerance? Do you feel like you have a higher tolerance for your team members or people in recovery?
Yeah, I don't think it's because I'm a CEO. I think it's just experience. like, you know, been sober for 10 years. And I think the life lessons that I learned was going through similar events throughout my recovery and watching how I responded differently. And I don't think it was necessarily growth that I responded differently, or I was, you know, had a higher tolerance level or whatever the case. I think what it was is I gained experience by going through, because I'll see guys who have been sober for a long time go through something which would seem really simple, mm-hmm. but they had never gone through it before and they lost their minds,
yeah.
you know? And so I think, you know, part of being, I actually, for my recovery, I contribute more of my tolerance because of my slipping and relapsing early on, mm-hmm. and constantly being humbled by having to go back to the meeting and say I relapsed, or even just internally, like just the struggle and misunderstanding within of like why I can't stay sober. Like I'm doing everything everyone around me is doing. I'm like, it got me to just a place of like, well, incomprehensible demoralization. Like I just. Mm-hmm. Everything mm-hmm. was messed up, and then it happened, and I got sober, and I realized that was a whole journey.
Yeah,
the whole thing. It wasn't a vicious cycle. It's never been a vicious cycle. It's been one journey mm-hmm. the whole time. And so when I get confronted by someone who you know, relapsed or quit or whatever, I'm just like, man, I did that like 7 times, yeah. you know, I think, you know, my expectations of others has, went away, because you just never know how someone's going to respond because of lack of experience or because of, misunderstanding, whatever. Like there's just so many variables to every situation
yeah.
that I just have gotten to the point where it's just like, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I only get mad or I don't get upset or I don't get frustrated, because I still have to deal with my stuff, you know? So, you know, 1 week I could be going through, you know, the emails and stuff not working, or my car didn't start or whatever, right? Like just fill in the blank. And it's just like, meh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a little frustrating, but, you know, we'll figure it out. 3 months later, I could go through this same exact thing and respond horribly, you know? And so what that tells me is that there is no real absolute truth on how to go through things.
No.
And people go through things in different ways at different times. And sometimes they revert and sometimes they move forward. And I think that's really why it comes down to grace. 'Cause it's like, you never know. You just never know. And so until I know, I just have to be graceful, because I hope that people will do the same for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a lot like this, you know, the Asian farmer story that you tell yep. spotty every time, but I get the idea.
It's a different story every time Adam tells it.
Every time.
It's
every time the kid. But yeah, you just like, you can't define anything by good or bad. It just is. And sometimes something that looks like it's going to be a pain in the ass ends up being like this beautiful disaster. Like, I mean, if you think about like the times in my life that I'm the most grateful for are probably the darkest days. Mm-hmm. And just because it was like a catalyst to deep, like real change and real joy in life. And having kids teaches you a lot of patience too.
Yes.
Just because you got to be... Because you don't want, I mean, there's just like, oh my Lord.
Yeah. I think that majority of my problems could have been solved by community
mm-hmm.
and identifying a good solution for stress response management.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I just, like, you know, it's like when you have a stress response, it's like psychological, you know, response, and your adrenaline and what is it, cortisone or whatever, just increases. So your blood sugar increases and then your adrenaline increases. And all I realize is that I might not be able to pay my electric bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's like the same response that people would get if they saw a bear.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like it's very, very similar. And so this is why I think that, you know, people who are in poverty or homeless or whatever are constantly in that stress level.
Yeah.
You know, because I've met some people that don't even realize they're in it.
Yeah.
Because they've been in it for so long that that it's just became a norm for them. And so when things do bring happiness or they do bring some kind of level of comfort, they start getting like freaked out, like because this that's more abnormal to them than it is to, you know, like a guy who gets out of prison and he sleeps in a bed for the first time. Some guys get on the floor because they're so used to sleeping in a cot.
And that hard,
you know, it's just uncomfortable for them. And so, you know, when I realized that, like, it's not that my feelings or my stress or whatever is fake. I just realized it was really intense.
Yeah.
Like more intense than it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like I shouldn't, if I can't pay my electric bill, that should create a level of stress, but not to the point where I feel like I'm running from a T-Rex.
Yeah, you can't get out of bed.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the negative mindset happens.
Yeah.
And then that's by the time I get to work.
Yeah.
You know, and start snapping off on people or whatever. And so, you know, at F5 we're, you know, we have mental health days that we let people take, and it's just no questions asked.
Because sometimes I love that. I do that with my kids.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is like when we first implemented it, I was like, I think I put myself in the shoes of like, I could take a mental health day every week, and nobody, for the most part, in the last, I think we implemented it maybe 5 years ago or something like that. Kind of like not. It was more of word of mouth that if you just need to take time, just take time. Yeah. But now it's an actual thing.
Yeah.
And rarely do we, it happens. People show up and they're like, I need to take a mental health day. And with just a couple questions, or are the people you're supposed to see today, are they taking care of, you know, stuff like that. And then they just take the day and then, and they don't abuse it.
Yeah. No,
they don't abuse it.
Either.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
I've done it since they were little. I'm like, everybody gets 2 mental health days a year. You don't have to explain why you want to stay home. You just get to stay home. And they each use their 2 a year, and that's it. And they don't fake sick, and they don't, you know what I mean? It's just like, it opens a dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, where even if they want another one, they're just like, oh, I'm just scared to go to school. And then you can at least have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I love ideas like that.
And I think it's, you know, the corporate world and, you know, all these businesses don't want to, they're afraid of that. You know, I think they're starting to get more and more, they're starting to understand, you know, if we retain our people, we can save a lot of money instead of just being done with them saying, oh, they missed work for 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, why did they miss work?
Yeah.
Is anybody checking on them?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a big part of it is that, you know, when people have that comfort level to understand that people are, you know, that's what we had talked about that early on is like, if we can't take care of the people that are taking care of people, how do we expect them to do their jobs?
Yeah.
You know, if they're in that flight or freeze or fight stage all the time, how are they going to help people? So,
or leadership that need to take mental health days.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like that's negative or what? That feels
shameful. Good. They should take them.
They should.
Sometimes leaders think that they have to lead by some kind of example and not take them.
Oh, well, you would be an example if you did take them.
I love how we're talking about Scott. And
oh, I feel it.
Oh, I didn't know we were talking about Scott.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about Scott.
Oh, Scott, take your mental health days.
I am.
He's taking a whole week off next week.
Good for you.
Yeah, he's going to go skiing.
Yep, with Chaney. Chaney and Kevin Register.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Don't you guys you rent a place, you just ski right out of the front door?
Well, it's in Big Sky and it's Kevin's place. We used to go to Beaver Creek, but we used to go with Tony. Tony was
kind of
the 4 of us when we started, you know, when I first came back. Yeah. And so it's been about 4 or 5 years since I've gone. So Chaney and I were talking about that, you know, with Tony passing and then just, he said, I'd really like to see you come. And I'm like, I had 17 reasons why I couldn't go, you know. But it kind of came to a spot where I was like, I just need, maybe this is the
sign. Do it. Yeah.
The timing's perfect. I showed up and I was like, mandatory.
Yeah.
time off.
Do whole some stretches.
Week. Take the rest of this week off. He's like,
I'm not taking the rest of the week off.
I'm a
2 weeks.
So it worked out because he was kind of back and forth on that plan. So it worked out.
It worked out.
Thanks for tuning in. As you heard, Scott won't be here next week.
No, I might call him from
basically. He won't be here next week. So
enjoy your skiing.
Again, thank our sponsors, Heat Transfer Warehouse, Shirts from Fargo, The Ridge Treatment and Reentry Center, F5 Project, and GoAwayBear.com. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Kirsten. Ricky will be back next week. Scott will be gone. Who knows where I'll be, and Kirsten is always here. So we appreciate you. We love you. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks.